Okay. Yeah, let's get back into Ecclesiastes. We're going to finish it up today, hopefully. There's just a couple points I wanted to make. This past week, we saw Robin Williams died. And I'll tell you, that was a sad thing for me to see. And I was talking with my mom about it a little bit the other day, and she made a point as to why it's sort of a hard one for people to come to grips with. And she thought, and I sort of agree, is that because he was a funny guy. And we don't expect funny people to be depressed to the point where they commit suicide. Because when we see somebody like that, we think he's so jovial, he was so funny. I don't even know if you guys probably knew who he was. Well, you did. But you didn't know him you didn't know him when he was younger, when he was on Mork and Mindy, and he was hilarious. And that guy, if you had to pick somebody that you thought was happy all the time and had it going, you probably would have picked Robin Williams, because he was just that funny. And I think it's really hard for society to come to grips with, or they're having a hard time. How could a guy like that commit suicide? Because he was so, every time you saw him, he just looked like everything was going his way.
That's probably part of it, though, too, because he always felt he had to be entertaining.
Right, yeah. What you found out, though, is that in his own personal life, he was a very insecure person. And he didn't have it all together as we sometimes look at him and think. But there's a guy talking about Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, in chapter 1, verse 2, he started out, "Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And Robin Williams had everything life could give him. And you know what he found out? It's all vanity. Mm-hmm. Useless. He found no hope. He found no joy in life. Nothing. In the end, he had fame. He had money. He had women. He had whatever his heart desired. And you know where it led him? To commit suicide. It led him right to where Ecclesiastes tells you life will be without the Lord. And if you don't have the Lord anchoring your life will be no different than Robin Williams. There's a guy, I mean, if you want a test case scenario, he had everything. And then, you know, and then you look into his life, you find he's on his third marriage. He's overspent himself. His internal life was a mess. Alcohol and drug abuse problems. The world just ate him up. And I tell you guys this all the time. The world's not it wants to eat you up. And here it took a guy, and Robin Williams was born right here in Chicago. He was born privileged. I didn't know, I had forgotten. He was born in Chicago. He was born wealthy, wealthier, maybe not super wealthy. He became super wealthy. So he never was poor. He never had to struggle in the sense that, you know, other people struggle. And it still failed him. And the world wants to eat. It wants to destroy people. That's the world is set up to destroy people. And he got destroyed by it. And the fame and the riches that the world says you can have are really to your hurt. And without the Lord helping you understand how to use fame or how to use riches, it will destroy you. And I felt bad for the man. I feel it's what's really saddening is to see society rally around Robin Williams, like, oh, he was such a great man, and making excuses for his suicide is so sickening. There are people who work with on suicide prevention lines that are so mad at society's glorification of Robin Williams because acting like there was somebody, some big Universal studio or somebody put out, you know, he's free now. That is the biggest lie.
He's in hell.
Yes, he's in hell.
I've heard.
But suicide prevention people get that all the time. Oh, I just want to be free from life. And so suicide's like their weapon. Suicide does not free you. And that's the lie of suicide. We have kids here who have committed suicide on the train tracks at Barrington High School, thinking they're going to be free from life. It does not free you. It, like you said, it sends you straight to hell if you're unsaved. And hell is far worse. I mean, Robin Williams, if he wasn't saved, the moment his soul left his body, he
heard a biopic.
Yes, I agree too. I believe he was very anti-God, but he woke up like that second, and in hell.
Yep.
And that
just made the biggest mistake.
Yes,
life.
Yeah, and it's the first thought, and it's too late. You like we've gone through hell, and it's in that book that we have out there now. You don't come back from hell. You don't.
It's too late once they get there.
I think they don't care anymore. I think they're so angry and so mad. I think if you took everybody out of hell and you brought them back, they'd still go right back to hell. They're not going to believe. I do think, though, that they understand that their situation is far worse than what it was.
Yes, I agree.
And that they wish they could be back here and out of the torments of hell, and that the torments that they were experiencing in this life are really nothing compared to the torments they're experiencing in hell. So if they can get out and come back here, they would. And I do believe there is a sense of, oh no, this is far worse. I'm not free. I'm caught in the flames of here. But it's just so sad to see the world make excuses for him, you know, oh well, comics, you know, to be like him, they have to go to the dark side of life to get the funny material, and then sometimes they dwell in the dark. No, he thought wrong his whole life. And you reject God, you reject the counsel of this book, you will end up like Robin Williams. Now, you may never actually commit suicide, but you're going to do what Ecclesiastes says. Come back down to chapter 2. And he says here, let's see, oh boy, where it says, I hate life. Is Ecclesiastes 2?
17.
Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought in the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity. That's where Robin Williams ended up. He hated life. Just like Solomon says you will, without God, you will hate life. And I'll tell you, every unsaved person, no matter how you may think they're doing, in the end, they all hate life. You can't help but hate life, because life is, like we said, it's terrible. It chews you up. It wants to destroy you. Everything in life will be taken from you, and you will end up hating it. And it's a really hard concept for young people to actually think. It's a really hard thing for anybody under the age of 50, maybe, or 40, or I don't know what age, to actually, because you haven't lived long enough to experience the fact that life stinks. And the more you do in life, the more you realize it's gonna fall apart. You build something, what happens later? It falls apart. Everything you touch falls apart.
My nephew had a knowledge of that at like 5 years old.
Yes, well, yeah, you can understand this very early, and that's one reason I'm telling you why you study the Bible, because the Bible gives you instruction, and you need to take it. Because life will teach you a lot of it, and you can avoid a lot of life's problems by listening to what the Lord says and letting Him teach you. And you can avoid a lot of the problems in life. Mm-hmm. Don't put any stock in this life, because it cannot. I was talking to a man just this last week. He called, and we were talking about some things, and he was saying how he was in a very... His life was destroyed as a younger person, in and out of jail, drug abuse, very, very wild lifestyle, very evil lifestyle, and he ended up getting saved. And his life is completely different now. It's wonderful. And he's not doing the things he used to do, and it's been years, and he's changed his life around. And he gives all the praise to Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ filled the hole in him that he could never fill with anything else. You name the drug, he's done it. You name it, he's been involved with it. And yet now he's like, Jesus Christ is everything. And he's lived his whole life has been changed for several years, and he's just gives all the glory to God. And he's like, you can try all that stuff, it will never make you happy. never. And only Jesus can. And it's something we want to have in our thinking. So going through Ecclesiastes, the world just proves it's true. Vanity of vanity. Everything is vain. Everything comes to an end. Everything just perishes in the end. It's just worthless. And boy, that's a real upper for a Bible study. But it's the truth. But the point is that's the truth without God in your life. That's the key. You can have a fruitful life with God. What does God say? God is life. Okay? Mm-hmm. Without God, there is no life. You can only have life in this world with Him. Without Him, there's nothing but death and despair. Don't turn your back on God. So we made it through Ecclesiastes chapter 9 last week. We talked a lot about choice and how God has allowed choice into His creation. God has allowed chance into His creation. We learned a lot of the fundamentals of how creation operates. As Christians, we should not be floating around wondering why. Christians should have the answer. Mm-hmm. Christians should be the last one saying, I don't know why God's doing this, but we'll know in the sweet by and by. No. That's what the world is looking. The world's looking for answers. Christians shouldn't be with them wondering why, too. Christians need to be there with the answers. This is why this is happening. Mm-hmm. You know, this is why a tornado came through. This is why somebody got cancer. This is why you lost your job. It's not because God's got some microscopic plan just for your life. It's just because that's how God designed and set up the world to run. And we need to have the answers for yourself and then for the people around you. And Christians should be the ones standing there proclaiming the truth, because we know why. One of the biggest questions people have is, why? Why am I here? What am I? And we have the answer to all that. Mm-hmm. So chapter 9 should clarify a lot of how God is dealing in the world and how He set up the world to run. We're going to skip over chapter 10 and 11. They're basically proverbs or things to live your life by. I would encourage you to read them. One verse I did want to point out is chapter 10, verse 20. There's good little things in here that, you know, I'm going to tell you now. We were talking about earlier. God's word is given to cause you to think a certain way. He wants you to think certain things. And the Proverbs, Solomon's writings are very good. Even in the dispensation of grace, a lot of the Proverbs, they still hold true. And here's one of them in verse 20. Curse not the king, not in thy thought. Curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. For a bird of the air shall carry thy voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. This is something that I just wanted to point out for a second here. Man is so good at complaining about everything and cursing everything. And what Solomon's telling you, hey, don't do that, because somehow when you say bad things about people, somehow, some way, you know what happens? It gets back to them. And this is some advice from God. And I wanted to point this out because I thought this was just really important in the sense that don't make fun of people. Don't say things you don't want somebody else to hear. Because more than likely, somehow, it'll get there. Read that again. Curse not the king. That means your king, your boss. Not in thy thought. And curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. It's just something to be reminded of, that sometimes we say things and we think, oh, it'll never get back to so-and-so, and then you'll be shocked at how it gets there, mm-hmm. some way, somehow. And so this is just good advice for people to have, especially those that are starting at the beginning of the corporate ladder, the beginning of business world life. You know, hey, don't make a habit of always talking bad about people, because, you know, somehow, some way, it'll come back, and it's not always to your advantage. So we're going to drop down to chapter 12, though. And chapter 12 is going to conclude Ecclesiastes. And chapter 12 is one of the most poetic chapters of the Bible, I think. And we're going to see it in a second. And it just lays death out there and how we're all going to experience death. And how he's just going to conclude like he opened the book. Vanity is vanity. All is vanity. There's nothing in life that you should be anchoring your soul to, because it's just vain. But let's get into chapter 12, and hopefully we'll get through it today. Remember now, we're going to read just a couple verses, then I'm not going to read the whole chapter right now, but remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the door shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low. And he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. When also they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond trees flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. This passage is talking about death. And we're going to go through it here. But he starts out, remember now thy Creator. It's interesting how Solomon uses the word for God, Creator. I find that quite fascinating. All men know there's a Creator. They may not know God's name. They may not know God's name. I saw on the internet some tribal people have come out of the jungle of Brazil, and everybody was all excited. They've got some aerial pictures of these. It's like the first meeting or sighting of this tribe, they think, ever. And they're like shocked how a couple of them have come out of the jungle, and they're like, oh, we saw two people that we've never seen from this tribe before. And that's nice, but what I could tell you is that tribe, even though they may or may not have had communication with any Western culture or any other culture, that tribe can know there is a Creator, a God who has created all things. And that's what Solomon is saying here. Remember now thy Creator. It doesn't matter where you were born, it doesn't matter what jungle or mountain pass you come out of, you know there's a Creator. Go to Romans chapter 1. We've read this before. And God has put it into the hearts of all men that He exists. And He says in Romans chapter 1 verse 19, because that which may be known of God is manifested in them, for God has shown it unto them. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Man knows there's a God. God has put it into the heart of every single person that there is a Creator, that they are created. I mean, look in verse 20 there. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen. You can't help but see God in the world. You can't help it. Being understood by the things which are made. You know what? We're all made. God says He is so visible through His creation, you cannot miss it. And God says, you understand. You know, when people stand before Him and they get judged at the great white throne judgment, no one's going to be able to say, oh, I didn't know. God's going to look at him right in the face and He's going to say, you saw me. You knew who I was. You chose not to listen to me. And there's going to be no one who's going to say, even those Indians coming out of Brazil, out of the jungle, they know. They know enough about God that they can get saved. And we've talked about that before. There's enough in creation that speaks about His loving and His kindness and who He is, that they should be in fear of God. And we know fear is the beginning of knowledge. And so Solomon opens up Ecclesiastes. Remember now thy Creator. So many people like to forget God. The schools you're in, your teachers, your academia, is all there to try and get people to forget God. We create big museums with huge evolutionary rooms, and it's all there to try and get people to forget God. We have a world that tries to blind us. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. Let me see. Make sure I got the right. 1 Corinthians, where the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And you guys know the verse I'm talking about. The God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which. I thought it was right here, but oh boy, that's not good. I had it.
2 Corinthians chapter 4.
Okay. That's it. Yes. You see, the reason I got it mixed up, because 1 Corinthians chapter 1, I knew it was right there on that section of the page. Mm-hmm. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 is very similar in a couple other areas. Okay. Verse 4. In whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which, you know, God says, you can clearly see me out there. What is Satan trying to do? He tries to blind you from what? Seeing him. Blind you, which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, whose image of God, should shine unto them. God, the devil has a plan to keep people blind from seeing what? The salvation of Christ. We have huge, like you said, museums built around to try and blind people from the creation and what it speaks to people. And come back to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. He's telling you, remember thy Creator. Remember Him now. And he says, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. You know, when you're young, he's saying, learn about God. Don't put Him off until later. Do it now when you're young, because it'll help you throughout life. And he's going to go through some of that here. But he says it's better to learn about God when you're younger. This man I talked to last week, he wishes he would have known God much earlier in life. It could have avoided a lot of problems for him. No one likes going to jail. He could have avoided a lot of jail time. Could have avoided a lot of ER visits to the hospital, because he was almost dead a few times because of different things. And remember now thy Creator in thy youth. The problem with youth people who are young, think they're going to live forever, nothing bad's ever going to happen. They have this false sense of reality around them. No, God's instruction is, do it now while you're young. Because it's harder to do it when you get older. And he's going to go through this, because a lot of times what happens the older you get, if you turn away from God more and more, it's harder to turn back to Him when you get older, because you've got years of hardening your heart against Him. Mm-hmm. And you have years of, and he's going to go through this a little bit, years of living life and hating life. And you just don't want to turn, because you just hate everything, even God Himself. I met a man once who hated God because of the way life was. And he didn't like God because he didn't like how the universe was set up, because of all the evil and suffering in the world. And he hated Him for it. No, Solomon says, and God instructs you, turn to your Creator while you're young. Let Him help you when you're young, and it'll help you the rest of your life. Don't put it off. It can keep you from problems. Do it now. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians, behold, now is the day of salvation. Now is the accepted time. Accept Jesus Christ as your Savior today. Don't put it off tomorrow. You may not... And a couple other things. You could die tomorrow by getting hit by a truck. Boom. You're done. There was a kid who I didn't know, but he was driving his motorcycle through town, and he got caught by the police. He was doing over 100 miles an hour. He got caught by the police and got ticketed and everything. And he didn't learn from that, because no longer than a month later, he was driving through Barrington. This is a few months ago, within the past year. I don't remember his name.
Motorcycle
accident.
Yes, motorcycle
accident.
He was like 7 houses down.
Oh, wow. Okay. Didn't realize he was so close to you. Mm-hmm. And he hit the telephone pole or light pole and died. And he should have learned in his youth when the police told him, don't drive fast. But he didn't. He rejected the counsel that was given to him. And he went out and he did the exact same thing and killed himself. I didn't know he lived so close to you. Wow.
He was part of a 15, 20 group of kids that I used to hang out all the time when I was younger.
Wow, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, how sad.
Yeah.
And but that's somebody who did not take instruction. And that's worldly instruction. There's spiritual instruction that you have to take. And there are many kids who do not take the instruction in this book. There are many young people who reject the instruction in this book. And I'm telling you, it will only be to your hurt later. Just like that kid who refused the instruction of the police and he was dead a month later, there's instruction here for you kids. And if you refuse it, you're going to have many years of hating life and become despair and despondent over it. You don't want to do it. So, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. While the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh. We know, those of us that are older, evil days have come. Nobody lives life and never has a problem. Everybody will encounter problems. When you're young, you haven't encountered all the problems life's going to throw at you. It's going to get hard. I hate saying that, but life's going to get hard. It's not going to be easy. And Solomon's telling you, get in with the Lord now. Not get in with the Lord. Oh, sometimes I say things that are sort of... Join the club, I know. He's not your buddy. But no, it's sort of weird. Let the Lord be Lord of your life now. Because it will help you when the evil days come. Do it now. Because when the evil days come, you want something that you can anchor yourself to. And you don't want to end up in a fit of despair being tossed like a little raft on the ocean. You don't want to have that happen. Okay, well we got to get moving. Well, the evil days come not, what's that? Nor the years draw nigh, or when you get old. When thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. What happens to old people? They end up having very little pleasure in anything. Because the youth is gone, they can't do anything. And if you ever want to know older people and where their life ends, go through a retirement home and walk the corridors there. And it's one of the saddest things you ever experience, because you have little room after little room, all with older people shut up and shut in there, and they're basically doing nothing with the stupid little television blue screen in front of them, and they're just basically waiting to die.
All the stories they tell are nothing but vanity.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's just so sad, the end of life for people. It's just so sad. And that's what he's telling you. Remember your Creator when you're young, because the evil days will come, and you will get old.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have no pleasure in life. So he says, do it now, and God can help you. And, you know, God's our Savior. Not only saves you from hell and the torments there, he saves you from this life. That's the thing. Yes, he saves you from this present evil world. Do it now. Well, now, verse 2, he's going to start talking about death and what happens when you're old. And it's in poetic language, but it's so true. The end of verse 1. Nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. He says, do things when you're young, because when you get old, the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars will be darkened to you. And the clouds return after. The older you get, the things you see, the things you get to enjoy, become dim. They become gloomy. Like today, we look outside, it's all gray, overcast. And it's like the clouds after the rain, they don't ever leave. For old people, everything becomes gray, just gloomy. The sun doesn't shine as bright for them. The moon isn't as they had a big thing on the TV and I missed it. Maybe I couldn't even see it. There was supposed to be the biggest moon ever out there in the sky, because it was like the big great moon or something because the way the earth was tilted in the moon.
Yeah, the moon's out during the day.
Okay. Oh, so you saw it. Yeah.
Same Friday, the moon spin out.
Okay, yeah.
I took a picture of it in L.A.
Okay, the big moon. Yes, yeah. But for older people, he's saying everything becomes dim, everything becomes grayer, nothing is as vibrant and as alive, and you don't feel the same thing anymore. While the sun, except your creator, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, because they will become darkened to you, nor the clouds return after the rain. To older people, it's always grayish, it's always gloomy. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong man shall bold themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, the older you get, the more you tremble. You can't keep the house up the way you used to. You just don't have the strength. You can't do it anymore. And that's it's just something that happens with older people. Older people's houses tend to become dirtier because they can't clean like they used to. It's no fault of it. It's just what happens. You just don't have the strength. And the strong men shall bow themselves. We know men, maybe you guys do or don't, men who in their youth were really strong, could do anything, move a mountain. And you see them when they're in their 70s and they're in their 80s and they can hardly get themselves out of a chair. It's just so sad. Men who prided themselves on being able to throw logs around and dig a trench, and yet when they get old, they can't lift anything. It's just so sad. And so he's giving us a commentary on what happens when you get old. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble. You see old people. You ever watch an old person? I really think I'm picking on old people, but it's just a fact of life of what happens. You watch them and they do a lot of this. And they if they try and clean the table, their hands like this, or when they eat.
Handwriting.
Yeah, their handwriting is shaking, and when they eat their fork is constant, their hands moving like this. It's not just people with Parkinson's. It happens to all old people. You lose your ability to have good control over your body. You lose your ability to be strong. The strong men shall bow themselves. They can't do it anymore. And the grinders cease because they are few. When I looked up some of this, and there was that's talking about teeth. The grinders are few. The grinders, what does it say? The grinders cease because they are few. You lose your teeth when you're old. And it made me think of that poem. Well, this is sort of weird, but in Lord of the Rings, Bilbo gives has a what do they call that when he was with Gollum and they were having a riddle. They were having riddles with each other, and one of Bilbo's riddles was about the grinders and how they march and chomp and whatever they do, or something like that. And we're talking about teeth. Well, that's what this is talking about. Where the grinders see in old
sheep.
No, teeth, not sheep. It was teeth, right? Yeah. No. He called them teeth in the movie.
The movie, like the second one?
Yeah.
It was the first Hobbit.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the cave where
First Hobbit, yeah.
First Hobbit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was teeth. And, side note, over. But here, when he's talking about the grind, old people lose their teeth. And it's just, he's just giving a very poetic display of what happens to people when they get old. And the grinders cease because they are few. You just lose them. I mean, it's really strange when you eat with someone who's older and they take their teeth out to do something. It's a very strange sensation when you're younger and you see that happen. Now, I know it's probably going to happen to me, so kids, get ready. You know, one day I'll go, and put them in my... yeah, Sarah, can you clean my teeth, please? And you'll be able to go take my teeth in the other room and clean them. I think that's going to be fun.
Put them in the bath.
Yes, exactly. But he's just saying, this is what happens when you get old. And those that look out of the windows be darkened. Old people, they lose their sight. They can't see as good. And they look out the window and nothing is as bright and as vibrant as it used to be. It's all, life becomes, like we said, gloomy. Life becomes darkened to older people. They just don't see as well. He's giving us a description of, hey, your body that you have while you're young, enjoy it now, because when you get old, this will happen to all of you. All of you will get old, you will tremble, you won't have the strength anymore, you will lose your teeth, you will not see as well. It's just what happens. And he's saying, you know, learn about the Lord now, because these things are coming your way, and you can deal with the old age better in a positive way with hope if you have the Lord. And those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets. The doors shall be shut. Old people like to live by themselves, and they shut the doors and the windows. We all know of houses that have old people living in them, and the windows are shut, and the doors are closed, and you never see them. And we call those type of people shut-ins, basically. And that's basically old. In Chicago, when we were having heat waves years ago, the Mayor Daley was the mayor at that time. He put together a program where people would call old people, because he knew old people shut themselves in their houses and they never got out, and people were starting to die of heat exhaustion in these houses. So he had a program where city employees, and he encouraged relatives and everybody to call your older relatives to let them know, make sure they're still alive, and to try and open up their houses so they get some air going through, because people were starting to die by the hundreds of heat exhaustion or heat stroke, stuff like that. And so we know this to be true. I just said, you go to a retirement community, and I've been to several. You walk down the halls, it's very, very sad. Door after door is closed, and people are just shut in to their little, teeny little closets of rooms waiting to die. It's just so sad, but it's so true. Life hasn't changed. When Solomon wrote this, the same thing were happening to old people a couple thousand years ago as they're happening today. We're all the same. We read that a little earlier. What is common to man happens to all of us. This will happen to you. Verse 4, and the door shall be shut in the streets. When the sound of grinding is low, there's no work going on. The work the old people used to do in the streets is gone. The streets have changed. They're unable to do what they used to do. And he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. And he shall rise up at the voice of... A lot of older people, they get startled very easily. They get scared very quickly. And they could be shut up in their little room, and yet a little bird tweaks outside. Something unusual happens, and they're startled by it. Because I'll tell you, old people are scared. They're scared to die because they know they're on death's doorsteps. We had we'll talk about her in a couple of minutes, but we had a great grandma that lived with my mom, and she even though she was 108, scared to die, but hated life, but scared to die. And we'll see some more about that. But that's what happens to older people. He shall rise at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. There's no music playing. They can't hear. We've seen the movies in the olden times where people used to have the big horn they would put out their ear to listen before they developed the ear implants where you can hear. Old people don't hear as well. The music is brought low to them. How many old people do you see at like a rock and roll concert? Not many. They don't enjoy it for one thing. They've lost the youthful energy to go out there and, you know, jump around. And isn't there a song?
Loud.
Jump around. Jump around. It's too loud for them. And it's just what happens. The youth is where music is at. Most music is directed at the youth. When you're in your teens and your 20s is when the bands that become big are formed. You don't see too many 40 and 50 year old bands just start up and become famous. It's too late by then. It's always in the youth. So, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Verse 5. And when they shall be afraid of that which is when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and the fear shall be in the way, they shall be afraid of that which is high. Old people don't like heights. Because you know why? They think they're going to fall. How many times, I mean, we've had older people here, and one of the big things they say is, don't let me fall. And they hate stairs because they could fall down the stairs. My great-grandma, whenever you moved her or anything, she would constantly say, don't let me fall. Don't let me fall. Don't let me fall. I mean, it was repetitious machine gun fire. Don't let me fall. We've had other older people over, and it's the same thing. Well, I'm afraid to fall. I don't want to fall. Because they know if they fall, one, they can't get back up. And we all seen the commercial, I've fallen and I can't get up. Help me. Because that's what happens. And they also know if they fall, they'll break their hip or break a bone, and that's not really good for them. So they're not, also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, they don't like the stairs. They don't like even once there because they're afraid to fall. And fear shall be in the way. Everything they do becomes fearful to them because they're scared it's going to hurt them and they can't handle life the way they used to be able to handle life. And we've seen this to be true in older people. Young people, you have no fear because anything that happens, you can conquer it. You have the strength. Your body rebounds. You can get strong again. You can deal with it. You can push it out of your way. You can will things and you can really push through things. But the older you get, you can't do it anymore. You just don't have the strength to push. You don't have the ability to conquer anymore. And everything becomes fearful. You can't see, you can't hear, your body starts to shut down, and you start to get scared of dying, is what happens. And that's just what happens. Verse 5, also when they shall be afraid of that which I, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish. That's pretty cool, the almond tree. Let me tell you about, what's that mean? Well, believe me, I didn't come up with all this on my own. I looked up what the almond tree does. The almond tree blossoms white, and it's the first tree to blossom. And what he's saying is old people have gray hair. They have white hair. Mm-hmm. And that's, when you're young, it's so weird. Because the older I get, the more I'm seeing these things. I see young people, like on television or my own kids, your hair is like so glistening. It can be dark, it can be brown, it can be blonde, it can be any color, but it's so vibrant and alive, and it looks so good, and it does. And then when you get old people's hair doesn't look the same, and it becomes gray, and gray hair doesn't comb as easy, or bald. Yes, yeah. Or you have no hair, you lose your hair, and it's, you know, you look at young pictures of yourself, and you're like, man, look at my hair. That's one of the first things you always notice when you look at a picture of yourself when you're younger. It's like, wow, look at my hair. You used to be able to poof it up and make it look real cool and whatever. And now it's harder to do. And that's what he's saying here. And the almond tree shall flourish. And it's the first tree to people. Everybody's going to get gray hair. And sometimes it seems to me that, you know, this is another subject. I believe the body is degrading faster and faster over time. And it seems like younger people are getting balder and grayer hair than they used to. But that's just my observation. Don't take that to, don't put that in your scientific book or whatever. But that's, it just seems like younger and younger people are getting balder and going gray faster. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's not true. They're shaving their heads because they have no hair. That's why they're shaving. They're not shaving their head. Nobody shaves their head if they have a full head of hair. No one does that. They shave it. He knows. Yes.
Guys
don't. Exactly. No one shaves their head. But the reason, you know, guys shave their head in their 30s. Yes. Exactly. Because it becomes weird looking, they think. So I still have some hair, so I'm very proud of that. Not like other people here. I know, but I'm losing it. It's really sad. You know, you comb your hair and you look down and there's more hair in the sink than you got, you know, on your head. It's getting worse. But he's saying that's what's going to happen to all you. He's just giving you this. See, Solomon is so poetic. And he's just giving you these illustrations out of creation and out of life. And he's saying, this is what's going to happen when you get old. And the grasshopper shall be a burden. We all know what a grasshopper is. It's this teeny little insect that weighs nothing. But to an old person to try and grab one and lift it, they can't. They don't have the dexterity to even hold one. If they even do get one in their hand, they might just crush it because they can't stop their fingers from doing something like this. Or they may not have the ability to move their hand to grab one. And he's saying that it shall be a burden. You young people, they look at the grasshoppers and it's nothing to them. But to someone who's older, it's, or to catch one or to even hold one, it's hard. And desire shall fail. Desire shall fail. Old people, they can't do anything. They can't accomplish anything. They know it. They have no desires anymore. They don't. They're just gone. What? Well, not okay. Not completely. What's that? Well, they still. Okay, I'm not saying old people are completely useless and they can't do anything and we should just, you know, get rid of them. I'm just saying the desires that you had when you're young, you don't have when you're old. When you're young, you can conquer the world. You can go out and you can start big businesses. You can go out and you can put in the energy because you have the energy to work 20 hours a week, or a week, a day.
The desires that you do have, if you try to act on them, they're...
Exactly. If you try and fulfill things, you just can't do it anymore. There are people I know that would love to go out and experience life at different places, and they can't get there. Why?
I act
like they're... Oh, okay. They can't get there. I know someone that would love to go to parades, and they can't anymore. And they get frustrated by it, and they just can't do it because they're too old. And they used to do that all the time, and now they can't. And it's sad. But he's saying here, the desire shall fail. They just can't fulfill anything. They can't do it. And I'll tell you, when you're young, do the things when you're young. You have more energy, you have more hope, you have more desire. You can conquer the world. But by the time you reach your 40s and 50s and 60s, well, okay, 70s, 80s, I don't know. Somewhere in there.
It was late 50s, 60s.
Okay, 50s, 60s. You start to lose that drive because the end of life starts to approach and your body starts to shut down and you can't put in the energy anymore and you just can't do it. And that's what he's telling you. So we come to the end. And the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. You die. Man, at the end of life, you can't fulfill any of your desires. When the almond tree has flourished, when you can't see or hear, we all end up going to our long home. The home that we all know we've been going towards since the day we're born is where we're all headed to. Death. And we're all on a journey to die. And it's just sad. And Solomon, he's just painted this picture of what's going to happen. And he goes, remember in verse 1, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh. When you're young, he's telling you all these things are going to happen to you. And you're really on a journey towards your long home, which is death. And where are you going to go after you die? And that's an interesting concept. What home are you looking forward to going to? Well, we're going to finish. I thought we'd get a little further because the rest of the chapter is interesting too, of course. But what home are you looking forward to go to? What long home are you longing to get to? The Bible talks about the Father's house. He's got a house. Are you looking toward going to that house? And the Bible also talks about another house, the house of hell, that leads into the lake of fire. Mm-hmm. Those are the two resting places you will be longing. Those are the two places you will end up. What home are you looking forward to going to? And we'll talk more about that next week. But it's just interesting how he ends it. Because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the street. And then verse 6, wherever the silver cord be loosened, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return to God who gave it. Death will happen. And we'll talk about the silver cord being loosened, the golden bowl being broken. Those are just poetic ways of saying life is gone. In fact, Edgar Allan Poe quotes that verse in one of his poems. And people are like, what's the golden bowl being broken mean? And they refer everybody back to Ecclesiastes. It's death is going to happen. So we'll end there and pick it up from there. I thought we'd get a little further today, but we'll get it next time.